From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us right now at 800-462-7413. Along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba?
Well, I hope so. We always have to have topics. Without topics, where are we? Topicless. But anyway, going back to the topics, food comas and long-term memories. Now, I don't know if you know what a food coma is, but think about what it's like after that Thanksgiving meal where you eat all the food. And then we're going to talk about STDs and the growing STD epidemic in the U.S. Nothing to laugh at. Important stuff from the CDC. We are in the middle of a crisis, an STD crisis.
And speaking about meals, what's our recipe?
Asparagus and smoked Gouda frittata. Now, I know how much you like frittatas. I know you and Monica make frittatas all the time. I know that you love asparagus. Gouda, I'm not sure if you like smoked Gouda. But I do know that if you had to spell frittata, you might not come up with the right spelling.
Now, do they have these things in the grocery store?
Under frittata, frozen frittata.
With cardboard.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, the frittata TV dinner, just like your mother would serve you instead of the Swanson's chicken and veggie dinner. So,
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba, welcoming a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, my question is, I'm 72, and I've had prostate surgery, and then I had an implant 3 years later. Mm. But so this is still an area that's important to me, and yet further you get down the bell curve, the more difficult it would be to find someone to have a relationship. And I want to know what is the data as far as longevity in relation to still being physically active in that respect?
So in other words, so after you had prostate surgery, then you had a penile implant so you could have sex. Is that what you're talking about?
Correct, and uh-huh. I characterize that as being able to do my job.
That's right. Well, doing your job, that's exactly it. It's not a bad job, actually. Some people would call it a rather good job.
How much do you get paid for that
Oh,
job?
My God, that's terrible. That is terrible. Absolutely terrible. So your question is, where does, like, general physical activity fit into the situation? Essentially, how does adding sex figure into your life plan for a long, sweet life?
Yes.
Well, having sex, having intimacy does fit into a life plan for a long, sweet life. And it's very interesting. So in America, we're Puritans and we're Victorians. So we're Puritans and we're Victorians. And I still remember when I was in elementary school, when Ozzie and Harriet, of course, were on TV, and they slept in separate beds. And I remember asking my mother, why are they in separate beds? And she looked at me and she said, because they're on TV. That was the answer. They're on TV. And that's because we were so Victorian, we didn't want to see two people sleeping in the same bed. I mean, now you turn on cable TV and you can see people more than simply sleeping in the same bed. But I mention this because we don't talk about sex. We don't discuss it as part of what we talk about diet. We talk about exercise. We don't talk about sex and intimacy. Now, in Germany, in Norway, in Scandinavia, in Finland, they look at this as a biological process, just like they look at constipation. In other words, they talk about it all the time in a very matter-of-fact way, and they talk about intimacy in a very matter-of-fact way. And why? And the reason is it's an important part of life throughout the life space. When your infants and your kids, if you're not touched all the time, children grow up, and they often have great difficulties in life if they're in a situation where they're brought up and they're essentially in, you know, what we used to basically call, you know, places where kids were, where they weren't touched around. They were orphanages. And we know the kids that are not touched actually have trouble later on. And so we know the sense of touch is very important. And as we get older, we often get touched and touched less and less for a whole bunch of reasons in our society. So I think intimacy is a critical part of wellness. And I think being able to engage in sexual relations, if you can, are also a very important part. And some people can do that and some cannot. And after prostate surgery, it's a big issue because nerves are cut, you know, and they're jangled, and it becomes very difficult. Now, have you tried Viagra or Cialis along with the implant?
No, because I felt like the implant was the end solution. The Viagra or the other ones, they have deleterious effects. Well, you know, I used it 3 or 4 years, and, you know, it's got it's not all a big picnic.
Oh, no, it's not. It definitely has side effects. So you have used those in the past?
Prior to the ED or those other aspects.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
The implant is definitely the way to go. Certainly, if you have side effects from the other drugs, the implant is the way to go. And the answer is yes. Keep on doing your business, as you would say, for as long as you can, because that leads to that intimacy. Now, are you in a relationship now?
No. Everything crashes and burns.
Oh, why do you think that is?
Well, I can't blame it on the other side, you know, completely. I think it has to do partly with the times, mm-hmm. and partly with women's more assertiveness, mm-hmm. Or say what they want. And I'm not speaking about in bed. I mean in general in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rough.
Relationships.
The older you get.
You bet. Relationships are complex. They're very complex, and it's kind of interesting. I have an old friend who visited us, Penny and I, just recently. She was an old friend from 50 years ago. And at one point, she was an old girlfriend from 50 years ago. I saw her like 25 years ago, but very nice person. She stayed at our house. She's very sweet. And my son, Zach, said, "Wait a minute, Dad, let me get this right. Your old girlfriend stayed at your house with you?" And I said, "Yeah, Penny was fine. She's my old girlfriend." He said, "I don't know if my wife, Louisa, would like to have an old girlfriend stay at my house." And then I thought, well, you're much younger than I am. You're much closer to that relationship. This is somebody from 50 years ago. Believe me, nothing's happening in my house. It's very interesting. But yes, relationships are complex and times change all the time. So the answer is yes. Keep it up as long as you can.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thanks for sharing that with us, and thanks for sharing that so other men who may have the same problem may also have issues.
Did you really say keep it up?
Yes, I really said keep it up. I was waiting for you. There was no response at all. I said keep it up, and I thought, boing, it went right over your head. There's no smile. There's no laugh. Why? Keep it up. What's wrong? Like, keep it up.
You,
keep up the good
you may
work.
You may have noticed.
I could have said.
You may have noticed. My arm is in a sling.
That's right.
This topic I have no interest in for some time. 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, before our next call, Zorba, some new research pointing to a connection between food comas and long-term memories?
Yes. Well, first of all, food coma. I mean, you know, do you know the word food coma?
No.
No. Do you have Thanksgiving dinner? Yeah. You've had it in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, I had Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. I always had Thanksgiving dinner when I was a kid at my Aunt Myrtle's house. And I always ate too much, and I would be tired, and I would lay on the couch. And then I noticed my son-in-law, Aunt Myrtle, and Uncle Albert. And son-in-law Larry was on the couch, and he closed his eyes, and he was closing his eyes. I thought he was just so tired from all the food. And he was tired. And I asked him one day, and I said, "Why are you closing your eyes? Are you that tired?" And he said, "Shh. It's not just that I'm tired, but if you had a father-in-law like I had a father-in-law, you would shut your eyes after Thanksgiving, too." Because he didn't want to carry in any conversation. So it was a fake food coma. It wasn't a real food coma. But this particular study, it actually looked at a very interesting animal, because it looked at an animal and it looked at food and what happens after food. So there is a slug that they look at in in terms of biological research. Now, mm-hmm. slugs and humans are not close together, although I have called some people a slug at times in my life. But I mean, they really were a slug. But slugs have these huge neurons. They're easy to follow. They're simple animals. And they looked at whether or not, in a little sluggy brain, what happened when you gave the slug lots of food to eat. And lo and behold, they found, and slugs do things. You can actually train a slug to go left and right like a rat, and you can measure whether or not they're actually doing things. I know I've lost you right away. You can just see.
You can train a slug?
Try it sometime. Try it sometime. Try it sometime. This is not
I believe everything you
believe
say.
Believe me, this is not something we're putting on the website. Zorba and Tom training a slug. It ain't going to happen. But yeah. Anyway, getting back to the issue, mm-hmm. they studied these slugs and they discovered what they think is after slugs eat a lot, if they're allowed to sleep, slug sleep, they make better long-term memories. Stop laughing at me. They make
this is weird research.
They make better long-term memories than if all of a sudden they're kept alive, like doing things slug do, like whatever slugs do. They move around, walk around. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't walk. They move around slug-like.
Right, right.
They do mobility.
Right.
But the question is whether or not one reason that we actually get so tired after we eat a lot, is it just for digestion, okay, or is it an important part of long-term memory? We know that long-term memory and sleep are intimately linked together. If you are not allowed to sleep, you don't make memories, you don't keep them. You keep people awake for 2 or 3 days, they don't remember anything. Mm-hmm. So the question is whether or not food comas have a biological and evolutionary purpose to it, not just to digest all that food because then you can keep it in case you need it, but also for long-term memories. You know what? We're just going to call this an interesting research study. And let's move on to the next call.
I was waiting for the bottom line on this, and it never came.
You know what? I'm trying to give it the bottom line spin, and but I will think about this at Thanksgiving when I get my food comas are real, folks. They are real.
Let's welcome another caller. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Randolph, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I have a question regarding cholesterol-lowering drink. Some 20-plus years ago, maybe even 30, my mom gave me a recipe from the Prevention magazine mm-hmm. for a drink that if you drink it morning and evening, mm-hmm. it's supposed to lower your cholesterol.
Uh-huh.
So my husband has cholesterol issues. Mm-hmm. So I wondered, is this legit or what's the deal?
Well, what was the drink? Then I'll give you
the recipe thought. Is mm-hmm. 2 cups of cranberry juice, uh-huh. 2 cups of white grape juice, uh-huh. 2 cups of apple juice, uh-huh. and then 1/3 cup of apple cider vinegar.
Uh-huh. I don't think that would do. First of all, so 2 cups of all those juices, 2 cups of this juice, that juice, that juice. Think how many calories are in there. I mean, like apple juice, you know, filled with calories, no roughage at all in there.
And sounds good to me.
And then you're putting in, that's right, you're the non-roughage guy. And then you're putting in apple cider vinegar because that's always sort of that's the traditional cure-all that came from the folk medicine in Vermont back in the 50s. And apple cider vinegar became the big thing. Not vinegar, it's got to be apple cider vinegar. I don't think that's going to lower cholesterol at all. Now, given that it was Prevention magazine, which was a big magazine, I'm sure they have a website now. I'm not familiar with them. I haven't seen the magazine in a long time. But if you want to have a drink that lowers cholesterol, I will give you the drink that you could have that would lower cholesterol. Metamucil.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Why now? Why, oh, dear? Why was that your response to
because
Metamucil?
Because it's not as good as that combination of juices.
No, the combination is sweet. Combination of juices with sweet, especially if you put a little vodka in there and you add it in the evening.
Okay, it's sounding better.
Nothing better. But Metamucil is a drink because it's basically roughage. And Metamucil, which is psyllium seed husk, will lower cholesterol in some people. So if you want to have a drink, throw out the apple cider vinegar, throw out all the other stuff, and have Metamucil. I don't know if adding a half a cup of apple cider vinegar to Metamucil would make it taste better or make it taste worse. I probably wouldn't try it. But Metamucil is a drink that would lower cholesterol. But not the other stuff, no. Stay away from that.
Shouldn't I just eat more fruits and vegetables,
works, have a more Mediterranean diet, and if you're on a statin, take your statin with it, and that will definitely lower cholesterol. So,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. You take care.
Appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413.
You know, that would be an interesting evening cocktail. If you don't like Metamucil, hi, honey, here's your Metamucil with a shot of vodka in it. It's the only way they'll drink it.
800-462-7413, our number. Before the break now, Zorba, time to put on your black robe and unholster your official plastic gavel. This is the segment we call Judge Zorba.
I am ready.
Good. The following email came to us from Randy in Sunrise, Minnesota. He writes, "Hello, Tom and Dr. Z. We press our own apple cider and then can the product using heat to kill off any bugs. My pregnant wife is just fine with that. However, I feel that the best tasting product is the cider fresh from the press. My squeamish wife had the courage to drink some in the past, even acknowledging this superior flavor. This year, she claims she cannot drink it as it is unpasteurized and the babies are in imminent danger from bugs in the cider. This is a hot topic in our home right now, and I really...
A hot topic over apple cider?
Yeah.
You know, these people do not have enough to argue about it. That's a hot topic. There are a lot of other topics you can argue about when you're pregnant, babies, saving for college, but there are apple cider people. Okay.
Our listener continues.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't mean to interrupt. Well, actually, I did mean to interrupt you.
I really need your input to settle the issue. Am I wrong to think that my squeamish pregnant wife is overreacting to the scary, scary internet sources, or is she right to be so cautious?
Well, first of all, you're wrong to call your wife squeamish when she's pregnant. Let's put that into perspective. We don't do that when we're a husband and the wife doesn't want to eat something because she's worried about the baby. Number two, when it comes to what you eat during pregnancy, women always take precedence over men, period. That's true. That's right. What do you think my wife, Penny, would say if I said, "You're overreacting"? She would say, "He's overreacting, honey. She's not overreacting." Now, the question is, would unpasteurized cider could it cause a problem? Mm-hmm. Well, it's unpasteurized, so, you know, there may be some bacteria in there. You might get some gastroenteritis. Who knows what's along with that stuff. I do, on the other hand, believe what you say. Unpasteurized cider, to me, tastes much better than pasteurized cider. So I have a recommendation. As a judge, I will now give my sentence. My sentence is, this year, while your wife is pregnant, give her a pass. Make sure that she is nothing but pasteurized apple cider. Mm. And think about other things like how happy that baby is going to be when she has that little bit of pasteurized apple cider.
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear. Right. Yes, dear. Judge Zorba has given his summons.
Have a suit you need settled. Judge Zorba is always excited to help.
Oh, gosh.
Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our delicious recipes coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
Bye.
I'm Tom Clark here with family doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba's here to help you by answering all your questions. But Zorba, before our next call, asparagus and smoked Gouda frittata.
Oh, I'm amazed you could pronounce frittata. Do it again.
Frittata.
Oh, you did it. Excellent. Excellent. Do you know what a frittata is?
Frittata. No, I don't have a clue.
Eggs. Always says eggs. Has to with eggs.
Why, sort of like, why doesn't it say eggs?
Like asparagus? Because it's not. It wouldn't be asparagus as smoked Gouda stir fry or egg or scrambled egg because it's different. It's sort of it's the way it's baked. It's a baked egg dish.
Okay, no.
Called a frittata. Frittata. Got to roll the tongue.
Frittata.
You did it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? If you can say it, you can do it.
I can say it. But now, can I eat it? Is
yeah, well, that's another thing. Do you like do you like asparagus?
Yeah, I do.
I like asparagus. And do you like Gouda cheese?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like Gouda. Well, so you might eat. Do you like eggs?
Sure.
Good. And do you like somebody else to make this for you?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You bet.
Right. That's right. Okay. So let's make it. Start out, you're going to need a little bit of olive oil, a teaspoon of olive oil. A
little olive oil.
5 asparagus spears trimmed and cut into 1-inch pieces.
5 asparagus spears trimmed and cut into 1-inch pieces.
You know, I remember back in the day, you could only get asparagus for like 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks around here. I mean, now I can get asparagus not all the time, but a lot of the time. I mean, America's great when it comes to asparagus. You like that. 6 large eggs.
6 large eggs.
1/2 cup of whole milk.
1/2 cup whole milk.
And you could use reduced fat milk if you wanted to, but whole milk is better. 1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 teaspoon salt.
1/2 teaspoon of black pepper, freshly ground.
1/2 teaspoon freshly ground black pepper.
1/4 teaspoon of those crushed red pepper flakes that you put on pizzas.
Oh, yeah. 1/4 little tea. Crushed and red pepper.
Flakes that you put on pizzas.
Yeah.
You know, those little chili things. 2 tablespoonfuls of chives.
2 tablespoons chives.
1 cup of shredded smoked Gouda cheese. If you don't like the smoked Gouda cheese, you could use regular Gouda cheese.
1 cup shredded smoked Gouda cheese.
1/2 cup of chopped tomatoes.
1/2 cup chopped tomatoes.
A lot of things in here, aren't there, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
A tablespoonful of fresh chopped basil.
A tablespoon fresh chopped basil.
A small handful of microgreens, these little greens that when Monica buys salad, does Monica buy salad?
Oh, sure.
You know, the greens,
sure. Yeah.
The microgreens, the little greens in the salad. And a radish thinly sliced.
A radish thinly sliced.
Let's make it.
Okay.
So preheat the oven to 350 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Then in a 9-inch skillet, set it over medium heat. Add the olive oil when it's warm. Add the asparagus spears, pinch of salt. Cook until slightly softened, about a couple of minutes, till they turn bright green. Turn the flame off and set it aside. Then in a medium bowl, whisk together the eggs, milk, salt, black pepper, crushed red pepper, chives, smoked Gouda cheese. In a medium bowl, you're going to mix it together. Pour it over the asparagus. So you're going to pour it over the asparagus into the skillet. Mix it around till the asparagus comes to the top. Okay, the whole thing is mixed.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in the oven. Bake it for 20 minutes. When it's set, garnish it with the basil, tomatoes, and microgreens, and the radishes, and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's a baked egg recipe.
It sounds good.
Really good.
It sounds good.
It's, you know, it's amazing. Sometimes you sound shocked because after you hear the recipe, you actually think about it. You think it actually sounds good. And you know what? We tend to have good recipes on this show. But it is. But you have to learn how to make the frittata.
Now, if I go to a restaurant, can I order this?
No, you could order a frittata, but you could order this from the internet. Now, I'm not talking about Uber Eats. I'm talking about actually getting the recipe and making yourself. Go to ZorbaPastor.org, or don't forget, you can find us through Facebook.
Back to the phones now, Zorba. 800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And our next caller is a listener in Omak, Washington. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I am 20 years old, and I have been taking antidepressants for just short of 6 months. And I was just inquiring, like, do they affect people of different ages, or would I have to wait until, like, my brain's fully matured to get the full effects of the antidepressants, or, like, am I just feeling placebos because I haven't been on them long enough?
Well, it depends on a bunch of different things. I mean, antidepressants work differently in different people. I don't know where age actually fits into this. Certainly, individual circumstances and neurobiology definitely fit into this. So, first of all, what are you on? Do you know the name of what you're on?
Prozac.
And how much are you on?
I'm on 10 milligrams a day.
Okay. 10 milligrams is a very small dose. So the usual dose for Prozac is about, the most common dose is 20 milligrams a day. I have people on 20 milligrams, 40 milligrams, 80 milligrams a day. Mm-hmm. And years ago I went to a meeting from Mayo Clinic, a very good meeting about it. And they said if the antidepressants don't have full effect, at about 6 to 8 weeks, you don't switch to a different one, you increase the dose. It's often a dose response. Some people just need more of a dose than other people. It doesn't mean that their depression is bigger or it's greater. It's a neurobiological thing. 10 milligrams is not a heavy dose. It's actually a very small dose. I would immediately, if you – and I tell people all the time, I'll say let's increase the dose. Let's try 20, and if not 20, then go to 40. And, in fact, I had a person – my office the other day, and I put him on the equivalent of Prozac, 20 milligrams a day. I gave him a tablet. I said, if you feel like it's too much at the end of a week or two, you can break it in half and go back to 10 milligrams a day if you have side right. effects, which can be irritation for the first couple of weeks. But I said, if not, stay in the 20s, and after 4 to 6 weeks, if you want to see if you have more effect on 40, double the dose. Let me know, and I'll put you on 40-milligram tablets. So I would go up to 20 right away. I'd give it a month. And after a month, if you go, I want to know what about 40 milligrams, I'd go up to 40. That's the way to do it.
Thank you so much, Zorba.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, the important thing, and I'm glad we were really able to help him, I think one of the things we try to do on the show is to give a perspective on what people are actually going through with their day-to-day lives when they're getting medical care. So here we have this gentleman. He's on 10 milligrams, which is really a small dose. I mean, that's the dose. It's not a common dose. The most common dose is 20. But some people who are very, very sensitive want to go on a very low dose of 10 milligrams. So we gave him enough information so he can then take action, call up his provider and say, look, I want to try 20 milligrams or 40 milligrams. And, you know, we joke around about things like frittatas and other things. Mm-hmm. But the real issue is we're trying in the show to give people information so they feel empowered to go and then question what's going on in medical care. And it turns out this is a big issue. Health literacy is the ability to take information and then act on that information. And part of health literacy is taking information in, thinking about it, and acting on it. And anyone who's listening to the show who may be on antidepressants, there's going to be somebody on the show who's on an antidepressant, somebody else in Listenerville, who may be thinking, I wonder if I should go on a higher dose or maybe a lower dose of my antidepressant. And that's the reason why we sit here week after week and do that. I mean, this is a good example. It was a short call, but it was very, you could tell right away from the way our gentleman hung up that it was very meaningful and he's going to go on a higher dose, undoubtedly.
It really is a good thing that you're on the radio.
Well, it's a good thing that we've been doing this for so long, and dementia has not set in yet.
Speak for yourself. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Black Creek, Wisconsin. Hi.
This one's going to blow your lid, Dr. Zorba. When a family of seven, five kids, when we were little, we would take a spoon and bend it at the neck, and every 2 to 3 weeks, a bead of mercury the size of a late pea would form in the bottom of our toilet. So we would scoop the mercury out of the toilet, pour the water and the mercury into the palm of our hand, let the water run off, and then we would bounce it from palm to palm and play with it, smear it on mercury dimes to make them shiny, splash it on the floor, and use a playing card to scoop a third of it back up, put it in a dish on top of our dresser. Now, let's keep in mind, we were bathing in that water.
Oh, no. I remember as a kid playing with mercury. They'd bring it out in school, and we'd coat money with it and make it nice and shiny, and But this was in your toilet bowl that it was forming?
Yes. So what I'm saying is that not only do we play with it, we also bathe in it. And when you put mercury through such a thing like a hot water heater, now you're also breathing it. And oh, we sure. drank that water for yeah. 5 years, oh, Dr. Sure. Zorba. Yeah. Why am I yeah. still alive?
Yeah. But I'll tell you one thing. You can get a blood test to see if there's mercury in your bloodstream. That gives you an idea. And it doesn't tell the mercury that's in there right now, but a blood test will tell you.
Right.
But you're right. The reality is not everyone who is around mercury that much actually got it, because we didn't tend to drink it. You know, it was a liquid, and we played with it, and it was on our hands in minuscule amounts. But because you didn't suck your thumb, you probably are okay.
Okay, but we drank the water for 5 years. That
you
was
did.
Out of our,
that's exactly yeah, that. And of, you know what? And that's and what it is out of your system. And like you said, it's amazing you're still alive, but it must have been in microscopic amounts. And the reality is, we got it out. So
okay.
if you're concerned, your doctor can do a blood test to see whether or not, you know, you have mercury in your bloodstream. And sometimes, you know, there are some treatments with EDTA and other things that we can sometimes give. I don't know exactly. I'm not up to date on mercury poisoning and what we actually give. But chances are you're still alive and you're doing things. So you actually dodged the mercury bullet. Thank you so much for filling us in. And make sure now you don't drink mercury-tainted water. That is really the issue. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for that call at 800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page. Time again for Facebook Feedback. Okay, Zorba, first, Jane in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, offered up some advice. For the caller who is sensitive to dryer sheets, I use unscented sheets, which still have a scent, but I cut them in thirds, so I use much less.
Oh, that's a very good idea. I like that idea.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Also, you can dry your clothes without dryer sheets. I never use dryer sheets at all in there, those little sheets that you put in.
I wonder what good dryer sheets
I have no idea, because I don't use them. I have no idea. I mean, I see them in the store and I go, why am I going to get dryer sheets? I just want my clothes to dry. But anyway.
Next, a listener, Tim, asked, do virus cold germs last longer than 24 hours? Will isopropyl alcohol kill?
You did a good job with that, isopropyl. Try saying that 10 times, isopropyl.
I had trouble saying
it's
it
rubbing
once.
Rubbing alcohol. Yeah, go ahead.
Will they kill virus germs?
Yeah, they do kill virus germs. That's why we rub our hands in. And frankly, if you take Purell and the other hand sanitizers, they're basically isopropyl alcohol in an easier to use. If you just use trade alcohol, it dries out your hands. And Purell and things like that, they made a huge amount of money. Big company, because they developed a way of using a hand sanitizer and putting it into a vehicle that was better. But the answer, yeah, it works. Use it.
And a listener, Olaf, wrote the following.
Olaf from, like, Minnesota? Can you tell?
I don't know.
Maybe it's Minnesota. Yeah.
O-L-A-F. Olaf.
Olaf.
Yeah. I heard your discussion about music affecting your health.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I am a metalhead, and heavy metal music calms me down. Many acquaintances and friends have told me that I totally agree with this study.
You mean that heavy metal music
yeah,
will calm
yeah,
you down?
Yeah.
Hey, whatever works, use it. That's exactly it. You use heavy metal, I'll use Schubert.
Finally, Zorba, Greg in Indiana sent us this photo on Facebook page and wrote, some Hoosier beat Tom to his tofu license plate.
I'm looking at this, and you know what it says? It says tofu on the back of the car. That's great. I love it. We're going to put this on our Facebook page. It says tofu on the back of a Subaru. So this person is pro-tofu versus anti-tofu. If it were a Cadillac, I believe they were anti-tofu. But it's on a Subi.
Well,
my car.
Thanks for all the Facebook comments. And if you have a healthy living question for the good doc, just post on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another topic to talk about, all on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our number. But Zorba, before our next call, there's a growing STD epidemic.
Oh, right. Huge STD epidemic. And it's nothing to laugh about. It's really a very important thing. Highest number of cases, according to the CDC, ever reported in the U.S. There are roughly 2.4 million cases, reported cases. We're not talking about the cases that are not reported. And there are, I don't know what the percentage is, but there are a lot of doctors who treat syphilis that don't report it. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to report it, but not everyone does. 1.75 million cases of chlamydia last year. When we look at syphilis, 14% increase since 2017, 35,000 cases, and a bunch of increases in gonorrhea, 500,000 cases roughly of gonorrhea. Now, syphilis is one of the most important cases to actually take care of for a pregnant mother if she has syphilis. You know, you used to have to get a blood test when you got your marriage license in Wisconsin. Mm. Other places, remember there's something called bad blood? I mean, that was the phrase, like, I've got bad blood. Mm. Well, bad blood was because the blood test showed whether or not you had syphilis. And it was because you could have secondary syphilis in your body. You can pass it on as a woman to the child, and the child can have consequences of that for the rest of their lives, including you can lose the baby from syphilis. So picking up syphilis, treating it in a pregnant mother is extremely important because there are things that you can do to actually keep that baby healthy. And since medical clinics have closed, free clinics have closed, basically there's been an increase because there's a lot of the syphilis is associated with poverty because condoms cost money. And if you don't have the money, you don't buy the condom, you're not going to protect your baby if you've got syphilis. Big issue.
I was going to ask, do we know what the reason is? But well, now you just told us.
That's it. A lot of the local health clinics are not getting funded like they used to. CDC is not getting funded like it used to for outreach. We're just not paying attention. We're asleep at the wheel, and this epidemic is occurring. We're not doing the public outreach like we used to, and we're not making condoms free. They ought to be free and around for anyone who wants to have condoms.
This sounds like something that we aren't going to correct very soon.
Well, we're not going to correct it very soon, but we can correct it. The idea of just giving up the ship and saying, well, we've got more and more STDs around is not a good idea. There used to be STD clinics all over the place, and they're not around anymore. And a number of men and women want to know whether they have a sexually transmitted disease. And there should be a cheap, inexpensive, easy-to-get-to way to find out. And the treatment should be free so that you can actually get treated for it. So right now, it's a big issue. Make sure sex with protection. If you're pregnant, make sure you check for syphilis. If you wonder, get checked for syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. This is not a small problem. It's a big problem. We're in the middle of an epidemic. It's important to stop it before it gets worse.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Shrewsbury, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
So I was diagnosed with osteoporosis of the lumbar spine about 2 years ago, much to the surprise of all my doctors. I've been pretty physically active my whole life and in good shape. And I'm currently on Prolia, which is seems to be helping. Per my last DEXA scan, I've improved significantly. The question I wanted to ask, and I'm trying to find out more about this, is there always a direct correlation between bone density and bone strength? And the reason I ask that is I'm sure I had osteoporosis for years before I even found out about it 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I've been very active playing in adult men's lacrosse leagues, softball leagues, running, exercising, you know, certainly put my body to the test and really never broken a bone.
Sure. How'd they find it, by the way?
Well, I actually had requested of my rheumatologist for a DEXA scan, and he kind of chuckled and said, sure, we can do that. I don't think we're going to find anything. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they found it.
So why are you seeing a rheumatologist?
I was seeing a rheumatologist because I was having some body pains, that I thought might be the development of some type of arthritis.
Uh-huh.
But I had a slew of blood tests done. I've had more blood tests than I care to talk about, and they've not really found anything.
Mm-hmm.
at all.
Uh-huh.
So the DEXA was the last thing we hadn't tested, and sure enough,
sure. But that also, doesn't explain the aches and pains. I mean, that wouldn't explain that at all.
No.
So they found osteoporosis, mild, moderate, a little bit of osteoporosis. What did they say?
Pretty severe. I think my DEXA scan was in the high threes, like 3.8 in the lumbar spine.
Well, that's significant. And then you've been on the Prolia for how long? A couple years?
Just about a little over a year now. I think I had my third or fourth shot.
Okay. So a few things, first of all, about osteoporosis, then I'll answer your question. First of all, you want to get measurements on the same machine. Preferably the same machine has to be by the same company. And the reason is there's a difference between different companies and how the osteoporosis is actually measured. So in other words, you've got to have the same machine measurement to see if there's a difference. And then even with that, the difference is not that absolute. So in other words, because of just the way we measure it, it's not a super sensitive test. So I mention that because if you get tested like in a couple of years and you go, well, it doesn't come down as much, it's because the standard deviation of the test of the normal changes, and they have to make sure it's done correctly. They have to put in something called a phantom limb where they actually standardize the machine before they actually do the test on you. So you want to make sure the test is done in the right place and the right way to know what you're doing. So that's number one. That's really important. Number two, so you've got osteoporosis, no explanation for it, but you don't have any broken bones. So how serious can this be? Well, the answer is we know that the measurement of osteoporosis globally, when we look at the whole, from a statistical point of view, if you have osteoporosis, you're more likely to actually break your bones than if you don't have osteoporosis. But it's not a one-to-one correlation. So in other words, if you've got a number minus 3.5, for instance, it's called a minus of osteoporosis, and you've never broken a bone, well, then you go, what do you mean? I've never broken a bone and I'm active. It's not as if I'm sitting at a desk job and playing tiddlywinks, although nobody really plays tiddlywinks anymore. You engage in lacrosse and you're an active guy. And so there's not a one-to-one correlation at all. Not at all. So if I were you, I would do exactly that. I would take the Prolia, and generally we put you on things, Prolia or Lendronate, the other drugs. You're on it for 5 years. That's where you get the benefit. After 5 years, we stop because there's no benefit after that. And this has to do with something called the osteoclast. Those are things that actually our bone is always being remodeled, is being made, and it's being changed. And so you've got you've got new bone and destruction at the same time. And this decreases the destruction of the bone. It stops, making it from happening as often. So anyway, I would continue on the Prolia. I would definitely continue with the supplement and keep doing what you're doing.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call, and I appreciate all the feedback and advice. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Call at 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's check in again now with your favorite backseat driver.
Oh, I can guess. I can just guess. The Grammar Police.
You got it.
By the way, we have a couple friends up from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
They were teachers. One of our friends, Vinny, used to be on the Board of Education for the state of Illinois for many, many years in the Board of Education. And I told her about the Grammar Police, and she started laughing. And she couldn't stop laughing.
Well, it's pretty good. A listener named Dee in McFarland, Wisconsin, sent the following message. Zorba, please inform yourself regarding the difference between dissing and dishing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Go ahead.
That's it? That's
no,
your reaction?
Tell me the difference. I want to know what it is. Oh. Dishing and dissing. Okay.
But don't ask me.
What, is it on there?
No.
Oh, I want to know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, to dish somebody is kind of knock them down. I have no idea what dissing is. I'm expecting an answer.
It would have been nice of
Dee
to give us the difference.
No, come on. Come on. They only give us the thing. I got to find an answer. I bet you one of our listeners, maybe two or three, will actually send an email to tell us what
it is. Maybe 20 or 30.
Now, I can understand how to spell dishing. How do you spell dissing?
D-I-S-S-I-N-G.
I have no idea. I've never heard dissing.
Oh, yeah. Dissing is like kind of...
What? You
putting
know what
you
this
on,
is?
Kind of putting you on.
Is to diss somebody?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is versus dish? You mean you know the answer to this?
Well, I don't know. That was a guess.
Well, we've got to get in there. There must be some member of the grammar police that will clear this up with an absolute definition because I'm stymied. Come on, grammar police. Step up to the plate and chime in and let us know what the answers are to dissing versus dishing.
And we'll hear from 20 or 30 of you.
Please.
Do you think Zorba should brush up on his slang? Share your thoughts by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, how can we help?
Well, I was diagnosed with papillary thyroid cancer in February of 18 and had a thyroidectomy, so I had my thyroid removed. And since then, I am still not on a regulated dose of thyroid replacement hormone. It seems my levels either go very high or they drop off very low. I was wondering if there's, doctor, has any thoughts or advice?
Sure. So you're taking, what are you taking, levothyroxine?
So I started on levothyroxine, and they also added a couple months later a low dose of Cytomel.
Cytomel, which is T3. That's
T3, right. And I actually went very hyperthyroid on that, a TSH level of 0.02. Okay. So right now I'm on a lower dose of levothyroxine, 50 micrograms, I believe.
MCGs.
And then 90 of a natural thyroid or Armour thyroid.
Why are you on Armour thyroid?
To up the T3 levels without upping the T4 levels,
I guess
is high.
Let me ask a question. Who's regulating your thyroid medicine?
Endocrinologist out of Madison.
And they're giving you the Armour thyroid.
Yes, along with the levothyroxine.
Because, usually we think of Armour thyroid, which basically comes from desiccated thyroid from animals, either pork, it's either beef or pork, is being something that we tend not to use anymore, and we tend to use both the Cytomel, which is a T3 and T4, and we don't normally use the Armour because verifying and making sure that it's actually very stable and it's the same thing is just not a common thing. But so this is an endocrinologist at the University out of Madison?
Yes.
So they've been working on this now for about a year and a half, is that right?
Yes.
And you've had the same endocrinologist the whole time?
No, I did change.
Why'd you change?
I think that first endocrinologist didn't really want to make any changes when I was running so hyperthyroid. You know, one of the goals sometimes after cancer is to run a little bit hyperthyroid, if tolerable. And it was really not a livable state. So like being in a panic attack or almost wanting to zip out of my skin if I could. It's very hard to explain.
Hyperthyroidism it's not a pleasant thing at all. It's something that really makes people very, very uncomfortable. Well, first of all, I don't have all the records in front of you. Obviously, I don't do that. But I always recommend if somebody is not being regulated, and let's say it's been a year and a half, and they're not regulated, I often say, let's get a second opinion somewhere else. That's what I do. You did. You got a second opinion in Madison because they weren't able to regulate it. And this particular endocrinologist is trying to regulate it best. But I think if after a year or a year and a half, how long have you been going to this person, this endocrinologist?
About 8 months, 9 months, not quite a year.
Yeah. I'd give it a year. I'd say a little bit longer. The reality is you want to make sure that the TSH is a measurement. It's counterintuitive, but the lower the number, the more medicine the more you're actually producing it. You want to get the number within a reasonable range. But I think if at the end of the year, if that person doesn't have you regulated, I would go to another one of the endocrinologists. That's what I would do. Because obviously you have you don't have a straightforward way of actually regulating your body. And when there's nothing straightforward, I always say, hey, have somebody else look at it. Maybe they'll get a fresh view. It doesn't mean first doctor doesn't know what they're doing. It just means that you want somebody else to look at it and get some suggestions. So I don't have anything specifically. Once again, I am not used to the stuff that I read is that Armour thyroid and things of the natural thyroid is not something commonly used. But obviously this endocrinologist at the U you know, at the UW has a reason to use it. And so there must be some data behind it. But I think I'd ask them also, where's the data behind that? Because once again, I question that to see what it was. And I think it's conjecture for me to say, well, it's because the other didn't work. The question is, why is this going to work when it's really not as standardized as synthetic thyroid medicine is?
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Sorry I don't have an answer for you that's exact, but I have an answer for you that at least will help you begin to lead the way.
800-462-7413 is our number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, before we head out today, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener question. The following email came to us from Michael, who writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, thank you for all the good advice you've given over the years. On a recent show, you recommended Zantac for a listener to help with this problem. It wasn't for heartburn, but something else. I'm now concerned because I heard today that Zantac ranitidine is converted in the human body to NDMA, a cancer-causing chemical."
Well, first of all, there is a concern by the FDA as whether or not this is significant or not significant. The drug has been on the market for at least 35 years, maybe 40 years on the market. Widely used drugs. A number of companies, Walmart among them, have decided to pull Zantac from the shelf. And I think this is an important question. I don't have the full answer to this, but there are other drugs on the market that work well. Pepcid generic, which is famotidine, is on the market without a prescription. And I think anyone who's concerned should switch from Zantac to famotidine instead and use that. I think the jury is out on this. I don't have the answer to this. It's something that's right now in evolution, but it's easy to switch to another drug instead of that. And this is a really good point. I'm glad they brought that up.
Have a difficult question for Zorba? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more information on Dr. Zorba Pastor and to listen to current or past episodes, go to ZorbaPastor.org. There you can subscribe to the weekly podcast, and you will find the show archive, Zorba's favorite recipes, his healthy living articles, and other helpful tips heard on the show. That's ZorbaPastor.org.